Without further ado, I happen to have a lot of love and respect for this lady right here, and Amanda Ho from Orchid.
Hi everyone, my name is Amanda and I'm an alcoholic. I want to say happy Father's Day to all the dads out here. Thank you for spending your Father's Day with me. Welcome to the newcomers. I hope you hear something in my story that you can relate to and that helps you want to stay and stick around to see the promises come true. Thanks, Glenn, for asking me to speak. So I have been sober since September 7th of 2017. So I'll be coming up on 2 years in September. Let's see. I took notes, so excuse me for looking. No, let's not. So, my parents divorced early. They are both not upstanding individuals. My mom is an alcoholic, active alcoholic. I don't have contact with her. My dad is an addict alcoholic, and I just recently started to allowing him back into my life. With boundaries, of course. So I never knew recovery growing up. I knew about AA, but that was for quitters, and my daddy didn't raise no quitter, so I was never going to come here. So I started drinking at a young age. I was never really punished for it because it was cool my parents could drink with their kids. You know, my dad threw me a kegger for my 16th birthday. My mom was sneaking me into bars when I was 18. 14, I got really drunk at homecoming my freshman year. And I got caught. And I got suspended from school. I was on academic probation, so I couldn't play sports or anything. And life kind of took a tumble real quick there. I was a blackout drinker from the first drink I took. I thought blacking out was completely normal. When people told me they only blacked out once or twice in their life, I thought they were lying to me. It's just like sound cooler. And I thought that for many, many, many years. So I continued along that for a long time. I moved out when I was 16. My dad went to jail. My mom was living up here. I flip-flopped back and forth from the high desert to here a lot. Dad lived in high desert. Mom lived out here. So when Dad went to jail, I had free reign of whatever I wanted to do. So I moved out on my own. And my boyfriend at the time was 21. So I had no problem getting alcohol. And I drank whenever I wanted, you know. Turning 21 wasn't a big deal for me because I'd already been at the bars for years. I got my first DUI before I was 21 years old. I had multiple DUIs. Let me tell you, none of them were my fault. Okay. Not one of them. So, 20 years old, I get my first DUI, and I was off-roading, so, you know, it was a fluke. I was under 21. If I was over 21, they would not have given it to me. At least that's what I told myself. So, I kept drinking after that. I remember going to court drunker than hell because I went partying the weekend before because now I was 20. By the time I went to court, I was 21. So I went to Laughlin for another off-road race, and I raged all weekend, drank the way home. You know, my friend was driving. So when I went to court, I was hungover as all hell. I reeked of booze. My dad was, like, waking me up in the courtroom, like, Amanda, you got to just stay awake for court, please. And, you know, I still didn't have a problem. So, I went through that first year. I thought my life was over. I did nursing at the time, and I thought I was going to lose my license and everything like that. And my first year, I went by at the blink of an eye. It wasn't expensive, like everyone said. It wasn't the end of the world. I hardly got a slap on the hand. I didn't do any jail time except for in the drunk tank, so it wasn't a big deal to me. Later on, after I turned 21, I started dating a guy that lived out in Barstow, and I dated him for a while, and he is a complete normie, and when we drink, he'd make himself throw up if he started feeling drunk, and I'm like, you know, pussy, what are you doing? And he would always try to control my drinking, you know. He would get to the point where he'd tell me, you know, man, I think you've had enough, and I am stubborn. I am stubborn as they come, and I'll tell you when I've had enough to drink. Well, eventually, like, I became very violent with that guy, and he was a great, great guy. I'm still in close contact with him today. But I would beat him up when I got drunk, and that's not cool. It's not, not impressive. And so I quit drinking for him for about a year and a half, but I didn't know anything about AA, so I never came to program. I never, it wasn't a permanent fix either. That was just, I needed to get a hold on things, because I wasn't an alcoholic. I just needed to pump the brakes, you know. I was 21 years old. I was sure as hell wasn't going to quit drinking for the rest of my life. So I quit for a while, and along with quitting came the depression. I had nothing to cope with, any life problems with. I gained a lot of weight because I replaced alcohol with food. And a year and a half in, I ended up with a pretty gnarly suicide attempt. And I put myself in ICU for 3 days. I tried to get booze that day that I attempted suicide, but I went to like a truck stop and they didn't sell alcohol at the truck stop, so I got a pack of cigarettes because I wasn't smoking either. Got a pack of cigarettes and took everything that was under the medicine cabinet, and I drove into the middle of nowhere and I took everything. Thankfully it was in the desert and I had a higher power looking after me. I got too hot, so I headed home. I don't remember heading home at all. I don't remember driving home whatsoever. And I guess when I got to the house, I was just glazed. My boyfriend knew something was wrong, so he came home from work that day and was there when I got home and called the ambulance. I woke up in ICU. I don't remember nothing. After that, I decided I would never stop drinking again because that was the problem. You know, if I was just drinking, I would have had a way to cope with things and I wouldn't have committed suicide. So I'd rather be drunk than dead. That was my thought process at 22 years old. So I slowly began drinking again, and you know, it was all fine and dandy, and eventually I got back to right where I was, blackout drinking. I moved back here, was at the bars all the time, in five cities. That's where I did most of my drinking. Not too long after I moved back, my second DUI came. And that was a fluke too. It was not my fault. I was hungover trying to get to work. It was 7:30 in the morning. I was being responsible and going to work. So, did a little bit of jail time on that one. I did 7 days in San Luis, which was Camp Snoopy. I thought it was the most amazing. It was girl camp. I had TV. They were braiding my hair. The girls were making makeup. It was cool. It was vacation. I didn't have to worry about bills. I didn't have to worry about my job. Nothing. So that came and went. That DUI came and went. My 18 months of program came and went. I got a drunk in public on 4th of July. I got my drunk in public at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't remember getting arrested. I started at home with my mom drinking vodka Red Bulls first thing in the morning. And then I went to Harry's. Because where else do you go on 4th of July? And my friend was the bartender, so she poured my drinks very, very heavily. Yeah, the guy that I was with, my best friend, he met a girl at the bar. She wanted to go down to the beach. I don't remember leaving Harry's. I went to go use the bathroom, I guess, where they have all the vendors. And there was too long of a line, and I'm a tomboy, if anybody knows me in here. So I popped a spot behind the porta potties. I really had to pee. There was food tents and everything you can imagine right there. It's 3 o'clock in Pismo on 4th of July. I got a drunk in public, and I'm lucky I didn't get an indecent exposure. When I woke up, I was in the padded room in jail, because apparently I was very obscene when I got arrested. I was calling the guards lots of pretty names, and I have a colorful vocabulary, so I can only imagine what it was. When I woke up, it's crazy looking back on it now. I look back on the insanity of all this, and I sat in that jail cell, and I remember trying to convince the guard that I was fine, and I was like, you know, I'd cry, and just let me out of here. Like, I don't belong in here. And then they wouldn't listen to me, and they wouldn't give me attention. So then I'd be like, fuck you. Hitting the window and acting like the crazy person that I was. And I stayed in that padded cell for a while. And I mean, that padded cell, is they give you, I call it a moving blanket, because they strip you of every piece of clothing you have. And they give you a blanket that you can't harm yourself with. And there is a hole in the middle of the jail cell. That's it. There's no toilet to sit your butt on. There's no hover. You know, there's a hole in the ground. Very, very degrading. I still had no idea why I was there. I'm looking out the window trying to see if any of my friends' names were on that board that you could see. And I have no clue. They finally put me back in the holding cell. And the girls in there were like, you are gnarly. And I'm just like, what happened? They're like, you don't remember nothing? Like, you are nuts. And I mean, these are like girls that are like in and out of jail a lot more than I've ever been in there. And I was just like, oh man. Finally found out what I was in for, and like my friends were joking around. They were calling me Red Dot because they thought I was going to have to register on Megan's Law for being indecent exposure. Somehow I got out of that. I don't know. That was so embarrassing. That's the only time I've been in jail where I did not remember how I got there. And it was so, so degrading. I got into the electrician's apprenticeship. I'm a union electrician. I got in after my second DUI. I still had the breathalyzer in my car when I got into the union. And I was pretty stoked to have a construction job. Because what do construction workers do after work? They go get beers. And they've got money for drugs, too. So, construction workers make good money. So I was really stoked to be around a group of people that drank and partied. Those guys partied hard. I did a lot of cocaine and did a lot of, I did meth once, not knowing that it was meth. I knew after. I knew after, and I drank that away, so we were okay. But the apprenticeship, I thought was going to be, I mean, today it did end up being the best thing that ever happened to me, but it sent me for a downward spiral pretty quickly because it was socially acceptable to come to work hungover. You know, I would come to work reeking like booze, and my foreman would just be like, just stay away from everybody today. Please, Amanda, just don't talk to any management. Like, go hide somewhere. So it was, I never got in trouble. I always made it work. It was cool. And then I met a guy in the trades. And it was love at first sight, you know. He was a gentleman. He was a sweetheart. Narcissist. I found the meeting of narcissists. And this guy had every quality of a narcissist. Things moved very, very quickly with that. We lived together within 3 months. I was in jail within 5. So this guy liked to call the cops on me when we drank. Once again, I like to use my fists when I drink. He laid hands on me once, and that was the last time he ever laid hands on me, because I made sure I was going to throw the last punch. So there was a couple times we drank together. It was bad. It was bad. It would get really, really violent. And even if I didn't hit him, he would say that I did, because he knew I was a blackout drinker, so he would use my blackouts against me. And, yeah, don't you remember hitting me last night? To this day, I have a giant key mark in the side of my car from him. You don't remember doing that last night? You know, he's just very, very manipulative. And I tried to get out of that relationship for a month or so. We went drinking down in Santa Barbara after work one day. We got real tore up at Fig. I like to drink the heavy beers, the IPAs, stuff like that. And I don't remember getting on the freeway. I remember fighting over where to find the car, because I had the magic button. And he's like, no, we parked over here. I'm like, no, we parked over here. I know we did. I have the magic button. This thing's going to beep when we're close. We're already fighting when we get in the car. And he's yelling at me, just telling me to stop. You know, pull the car over, Amanda. I'm like, fuck you, we're not pulling over, you know. I'll take it. He's a mama's boy. Well, you know, He's from the Valley and lives with his mom and dad, and they're land rich, and he's never had a bad day in his life. So he, I'm an instigator. I like to push buttons. I'm very mean. I was very mean. And so I kept telling him, you know, I'll take you home to your mommy. You want your mommy? We're going to go to your mom's house. And no man wants to be talked to like that from a woman. So he bounced up in my car while I was doing 80 on the freeway. Yeah. I reached over, just hit him once. And he's on the phone with 911 saying I beat the shit out of him. And that I wouldn't let him out of the car. So I pull over, I let him out on the freeway in Goleta. I let him out. By the time his feet hit the floor, his feet hit the ground, he was on the phone saying, my girlfriend's beating the shit out of me, it's her third DUI, and I took off. I left him there. I run radar in my car, and so I set that thing, and I'm sick at this time, you know, I'm pretty drunk. And I'm like, as long as I get home, I'll be okay. Everyone's like, I'm on the phone with friends. They're like, pull over. Like, what are you doing? You're going to get caught. I'm like, no, I got to get home. I have to make it home. So I put my car in cruise control at 74. Cops get me right around Buellton. They asked why they pulled, if I knew why they pulled me over. They said I was swerving. I said, or they said I was speeding. I said, I run radar. You did not clock me. They were really surprised to know, find out that I knew why I got pulled over. At this point, I didn't know there was domestic violence charges going at me. They took pictures of my hands. They asked to see my hands. There was nothing wrong with my hands. I didn't beat the guy up. But I still got taken in for a third DUI, of course. I didn't know I was getting charged with the domestic till I was in custody. When they fingerprinted me, they printed out my charges, and I found out that I was getting charged with domestic. And we lived together at the time. So my mom told him, you better get your shit out of the house before Amanda gets out of jail. I promise you that. And he did. I have not seen him, talked to him, had one word since. But so, the outcome of all of that was a lot. It was a year in court. I fought the domestic violence charge. I beat the domestic violence charge, but I still am facing three DUIs. And yeah, I hit a low. This time my life was really, really over. I thought I was going to get kicked out of the apprenticeship. I was in my third year out of a 5-year apprenticeship. I thought I was going to lose everything. I was in a really dark spot. And when I get into a dark spot, I drink more. Because that's just going to help my problem. So I spiraled quick. I was doing blow every day. I got hurt drinking, so I was out on disability for work. So now I have no responsibilities on top of it. So I'm drinking even heavier. Went back to work and finished court up within about a month. And with court came the Scram bracelet, the alcohol monitor. Came 120 days in jail, 30 mandatory in custody, and can apply for EM after that. Probation, classes, all that kind of good stuff too. So I still was drinking at the time, and then when I had to get that bracelet on, I was like, oh, 90 days, like that's nothing. I could quit drinking for 90 days. Because my thing is, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't need to wake up and have a drink. That was my thought process for a very long time. I could easily go home from work and have a beer and not need to finish that six-pack. Alcoholics need to finish that beer. They can't leave it in the fridge. So I was really, really convinced that I was not an alcoholic. The blackouts were normal to me. I was fully, fully believing that everybody had them. So 90 days I didn't think would be a problem. A week into that bracelet, I wanted to die. I wanted to die. I was also doing anger management because part of me getting out of that domestic violence charge was to do a year of anger management. That made me angry. That made me very angry. It was horrible. Those people are crazy. And, you know, Only reason women are in anger management is because of men. You men drive us nuts. So, we wouldn't do things to you if you didn't make us. So it was just a sick cycle, and I was going to those classes when I got the bracelet put on, and thankfully I was working with a couple people that were in recovery, and they had talked to me before I even got the bracelet on, because I had plans. I remember this day. My ankle bracelet came off December 7th. And it was a Tuesday. I have class on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We go to Fig Mountain before school as that was normal. Not alcoholic. So I was going to go to Fig before class, have like four beers and go to class and be right back on my merry way of life. And the guys that were in recovery that I worked with, you know, they said, don't you think that sounds a little crazy? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to go get fucked up. I'm just going to go have a couple beers. They're like, how many days? I'm like, 48 days and 2 hours. And they're like, you're not an alcoholic? I'm like, no, I don't need it. I want it. It's a celebration to get this bracelet off. One of those guys is here. And I'm so thankful for him. I thought he was crazy. Like, he's you're sober? You don't drink, you don't do drugs, you don't do nothing. And his wife, that's unheard of. I didn't know what program meant. I didn't know what recovery meant. Nothing. And they suggested that I looked into it. And I'll never forget the breakdown that I had before deciding to come into the room. I was on my way home from anger management. My anger management was in Lompoc. And I was coming home, and I lost it. I was bawling, like, the ugly cry. I'm an alcoholic. Like, I'm not old enough to be an alcoholic. I'm not, you know, there's so many things going through my head. Like, never again. No lake trips, no beach trips, no football games. Like, I can't do this. I'm going to die under the bridge with a bottle in my hand. Like, I am convinced that is where my life is going to take me at this point. And I have so much going for me. You know, I've been, for me, lucky enough not to have kids to drag through any of this. You know, and I knew I had to clean this shit up. I was going to lose everything. It took me about a month to find my way into these rooms. I was sober because I had to be. I wasn't trying to find a way to cheat that bracelet, even though people were telling me how to cheat that bracelet, you know. And I was not going to jail. Not anymore. I was not getting another violation. I was asking around to friends, like, does anybody know about this AA stuff? I went on Amazon and looked for AA books. Just books about alcoholism, not even necessarily anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Just something that I could read that might explain what I was going through. So I ordered a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. Come to find out, it's the big book. Did not know that. I read that book like a book, you know, front to back. I didn't bring it with me, but I have the spine of it taped. Because on the spine it says Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would take that book to the gym with me, and I did not want anybody knowing I was reading an Alcoholics Anonymous book at the gym. So I taped it because I was really embarrassed. And I kept looking online at the meeting directory, and I couldn't understand it. Closed, open, stag, these are at churches, these are at houses, like, this is not for me. And I was asking around, people are like, well, let me ask my friend. I have a friend of a friend of a friend that goes, we'll get back to you. I was going through DUI classes for that last DUI, and I was throwing around the idea of getting sober. And one of the guys came in with a meeting directory, said, my wife left this in my truck. It might help you. So I found an 8 p.m. podium meeting here. Did not know what podium meant. Was really scared when I found out that it meant talking at this thing. Terrified. So Friday night, I think I had 30 days left on my bracelet. And I knew I had to figure something out before I got that bracelet off because I was going to drink again. And I was convinced at this point that I could not do that. step back a little bit. I drank and drove after my third DUI. I was on a suspended license going to Jocko's, having a couple beers, and driving home. I pulled the tent off my car so I didn't have a reason to get pulled over. And that's my MO. I will always drink and drive. I will always get behind that wheel. I have no concept that it is not right to get behind that wheel. And I'm so thankful that none of my DUIs ended in accidents. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't wreck any vehicles. I didn't kill anybody. And I'm very thankful for that because not everybody's been so lucky. You know, I know people personally that have not been so lucky. And if I go back out, I'm convinced that, you know, you can only be lucky for so long. So a big thing with coming into AA was the God thing. I'm not religious. It's because I was a really negative person. If there was such a thing as God, why did bad things happen to people? Why did bad things happen to good people? Why do drunk drivers kill innocent people? There was a lot of reasons I could not believe in God. And so coming in here, I didn't know what to expect. I really was just at a loss. And I can't even tell you I remember getting in the car to drive here that night, and I was sober for 60 days when I came in here. But I was scared to death. And I remember walking up, and everybody was sitting out here smoking and having fun and laughing, and I didn't even know where to go. Like, am I in the right place? Like, this does not look like an establishment where people are getting sober. I'm judgmental, I admit it. You know, I walked in like, this is not for me. And a nice young lady came up to me, and she saw me, she explained it very well, deer in the headlights. And I had no idea what I was doing, and it was very apparent all over my face. She came, literally grabbed me by the hand, brought me in, gave me another directory and circled meetings that I would be interested in. And then she also didn't give me a chance to say no. There was a barbecue the next day. And she said, why don't you come? We're having a barbecue tomorrow. I'm a food person. I love food. You can convince me to do anything with just some food. I'm like a dog. So she's like, there's tri-tip. And there's a barbecue. It's a lot of fun. I'll save you a seat. You want to go? And I'm like, yeah. That sounds like a great idea. And I get home like, what the fuck did I disagree to? This nice lady expects me to be there tomorrow. I kept my word. I think I tried to bail. I think I texted her and said, I just can't make it. And I went. I was so uncomfortable. Mind you, I told you I'm not religious. It was a speaker meeting at a church, so I have a man standing up at the front of the church room speaking to me, like preaching. And it was so, everybody knows everybody. I'm the outcast. I don't know. I don't feel like I fit in, you know. And my allergies really were acting up that day. But it was a great excuse to bail out. So I waited. I didn't want to be rude to the speaker. I didn't know anything about, you know, manners or rules or anything, but I knew I shouldn't leave in between this guy talking. So as soon as he was done talking, I was like, I gotta go. My allergy is really bad. Before the serenity prayer, I was out the door with just a, got out of that one. This girl never left me alone. She drugged me everywhere. We went to all kinds of different meetings. We went to the bonfire meetings. We went to, you know, we played games at her house till 2 o'clock in the morning. Sober. That was mind-blowing to me. And we all had a lot of fun. And it was, you heard her friends laughing about all the dumb, crazy stuff they did, you know. One guy, I'll never forget it, he was talking about how you learn, because when I first got sober, I had a really hard time with the friends thing. None of my friends were hitting me up anymore because I wasn't drinking. None of my friends were hitting me up. And I was having a really hard time with that. And one of them explained it to me. He's like, you know, it's funny the friends we had when we were out there. He's like, I remember getting out of jail and my buddy being like, dude, I saved you an 8-ball. Like,
yeah.
You are my best friend, son. You are my best friend. I'm like, dude, every time I've been out of jail, I've been taken to the bar. I've been taken to the bar every time I have got out of jail. Not go home, take a shower, and get pretty. Like, let's go straight to the bar. And those were my best friends. My mom did that for me. So, it was funny to hear that analogy because it really made me think, like, are these really my friends? And I always often wondered, like, how people wanted to hang out with me because I wasn't a fun drunk. Like, I mentioned that I could have a couple beers and be fine, but I also could drink the entire keg, and I'm not stopping till I'm unconscious, till I have pissed myself, till I have fell through, I've lost everything. I called it booze clues in the morning. That is a real thing. I had to go through my pictures. I had to go through my text messages, my Snapchats, my social media accounts, my wallet, make sure I have all my debit cards, make sure I have my ID, make sure I have my phone, my cigarettes, everything. It was just instant. And most of the time, I'd drive home and not remember it. So now after I found everything in the house, I need to go take a lap around the car, make sure I didn't hit anything. Thankfully, never did. But it's just, it's the insanity that I drove myself through. So, all of a sudden, I had a group of people hitting me up, like, wanting to hang out and go do stuff sober. We were going to concerts. We were going to theme parks. We were going to the beach. We were off-roading. We've done everything. They showed me that, you know, and they had a blast. None of them were talking. I mean, we would talk about booze, but not like, oh, man, I really wish we could have a beer. It was more like, oh, you did that? I got you. I'm one-upping you. I did this. And it's hilarious. So where is how dumb we were? Yeah, it's crazy. I still look back on all the dumb, crazy stuff I did and all the lies I told myself to keep myself from coming here. I don't know if my mom even knows I'm sober today because I don't talk to her. Because the last communication I had with her was after my last DUI. And since I couldn't drive up to Pismo anymore to party with her, I was a piece of shit. And I was never going to amount to nothing. I was going to jail. I was just a polluter. I'm my mom's only child, by the way. And I am really good at cutting people off that piss me off. I would give you no explanation. Even though I'm a blackout drinker and I understand that we say mean things when we're drunk, I had no sympathy for her. If she didn't remember what she said, then that was not my problem. She just... To this day, I know she tries to get a hold of me because I'll have other people hit me up and say, oh, I heard from your mom this or something. She is blocked on every aspect of my life. I'm doing the work to try to come to grips with how to have a relationship with her. But at this point, it's healthier for me to not have a relationship with her. I have done a full set of steps. I'm currently working with a new sponsor and starting over another set of steps to go into a little bit more in depth. My first sponsor was great. He became my best friend. It was exactly what I needed when I needed it. And I'm super thankful for her. She knew everything, and I had no issues talking to her about everything. My fourth step was not big scary like I expected it to be. That's why I kind of want to do another thorough one, because I need that scariness. Starting new steps is cool. You know, I didn't rush through the first set of steps because I found out you don't graduate from this program. So why am I going to rush through them? I'll take my time. I'll get to it when I get to it. I'm still here. I'm still sober. I don't go to as many meetings as some people, but I do. I'm very, very self-aware of when I need to get to meetings. I have learned throughout recovery that I can't go more than a week without a meeting. I need to do a minimum of one a week because I start getting irritated, I start getting agitated, snappy, and mean. And I don't want to be that person anymore. I don't want to beat up dudes no more. I still work in construction. I finished that 5-year apprenticeship this year. I am a journeyman wireman now. I make really great money. I have really great benefits. And I don't blow it all at the bar anymore. And that's huge. About 8 months in my journey into sobriety, the depression hit really bad. I've always had depression, and I tried to, once the fog from alcohol went away, I was hoping that the depression would go away, and it didn't. It got worse. It got really bad, and the worst part is that I was clear enough in the mind to know that it wasn't normal, to know that I had no reason to be depressed, that my life was getting better, I was sober, everything was going good. There was just something wrong. So talked to my sponsor and stuff, and you know, I went to the doctors and I got on some antidepressants, and it made the world of difference. I was lucky to find the right one the first time. And it made a world of difference in my sobriety. I am very open with my doctor, however, that I am in recovery, so that she doesn't prescribe me anything that could be habit forming. Later on this Friday, I also got on an as-needed anxiety medication because after getting depression under control, I quit smoking. And with quitting cigarettes came the anxiety because we just need something to cope with. And I've wanted to quit smoking for so long. I have not smoked in over 6 months now. Yeah, super. For me, that's bigger than not drinking because it's huge. And I haven't had to take those as-needed anxiety pills. Even just knowing that they're there is helpful. But I talk to other people in the program. I stay connected, and it helps a lot. Being able to just cry to somebody is really therapeutic. And being honest about what's bothering you, recognizing what is bothering you to me is really big. Being able to step back and say, why is this person being a jerk bothering me so much? You know, what's going on in their life that, you know, how does this affect me? It's huge. Forgot to mention. So part of the third DUI was that jail time I spoke about. I was able to get them to push that out because I was still in school, and I would have, in the apprenticeship, you're not allowed to miss more than 2 days. So I had them push it out till the summer. So by the time summer came around, I was sober. I went to jail sober as a judge. And I ended up staying in there for 31 days. And it was in Santa Barbara County, which is not a pretty jail whatsoever. The honor farm is gone for females. So you're in the cells with people that are facing felony charges. They're serving prison terms. It is a very terrifying place. I am a very strong person. I am very tough. Not in there. I am not jail tough whatsoever. I do not have street cred. I don't do drugs. Drugs were never a big part of my story. I did cocaine, but that's only so I could drink more. When I found that cocaine pulled me out of blackouts, I did more cocaine so I could drink more. But I never really had a meth problem or any, and that's what they're doing in jail. They're doing meth and they're doing heroin. And that's the first time I've honestly seen heroin was when I was in jail. It was girls beating the shit out of each other, walking away like nothing happened, gushing blood, guards have no idea. I had one chick trying to fight me she thought I was a cop. Thought I was a cop. I'm like the only one in the cell that's in for alcohol. Everybody else is in for robbery, drugs, harder stuff than alcohol. Alcohol's legal. So it was hard, and the fact that I was in recovery. I spoke with my sponsor every single day that I was in jail. I spoke with Jessica every single day that I was in jail. I tried not to because I don't like to be a bother to my friends. And I told them, I'll call you once a week. And they said, no. You will call us once a day. I'm like, you guys know where I am. I'm not going anywhere. You know exactly where I'm at. And no, they insisted that I called every day, and they wrote me letters. I told them not to. I just forget me. I am in trouble. Just let me be. Let me do my time. I don't need your guys' help. I don't need nothing. I'm stubborn. I told you that. I am very stubborn. I can do it all on my own. I was even gonna take myself to jail by myself. I was gonna park my car at a friend's house and Uber to jail so that I didn't have to ask anybody to take me. Like 2 days before I was supposed to turn myself in, I lost it. Broke down, ugly crying, called death, and was just like, I have nobody. I don't have my parents. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have friends. Like, I love to think that I am just alone in this world. I have an amazing support group around me. My friends that came from Lompoc offered to take me and pick me up from jail. I had plenty of people offering, but I wasn't listening. I wanted to do it on my own, so I could say that I did it on my own. So I could say I did it without any of your help. Jessica took me to jail, and we went and got sushi before, and it was amazing. And what? And Starbucks. I had to have my Starbucks before I went in. And when I got out, her boyfriend brought me to his personal vehicle, left himself stranded in Santa Barbara, and took the bus home so that I had a way to get home, and I didn't have to sit at the jail and wait. And that's the kind of friends I have in my life today, thanks to AA. I have people that show up for me. I have people that have been there, even when I haven't been the best of friends. When I have bailed out on my friends, they've still been there for me. I have people in my life that pay attention to what's going on, how my moods are, who else is in my life, what I'm doing in my life. And they don't ask how I'm doing to be nosy. They ask because they genuinely 100% care about me. I never thought I would have friends like that. I never thought I would have friends that I could call in the middle of the night and have to worry about whether they were drunk or sober to give me help. I have people that I don't even talk to on a daily basis that I know damn well I could call at any point in time, and they would be there in a heartbeat. And I still hang out with some of my friends that drink, and I see alcoholic tendencies in them. It's not my job to point it out. I refuse to think that I'm better than anybody, because I'm not. I'm lucky that I got in here when I did. I'm thankful that I found this community, this fellowship. It's helped me leaps and bounds in every aspect of my life. My job, I'm going to be a foreman here pretty soon. That means I will be in charge of other men. And they have to listen to me. I have a boyfriend today that is a healthy relationship. When we first started dating earlier this year, it was very difficult for me to understand why he wasn't calling me every second of the day, why he wasn't questioning everything I did, why he wasn't asking what I was doing at all parts of the day. To me, that was him not caring. And through talking with other people in these rooms, I have learned that that is healthy. It's healthy communication. He does care what I'm doing. Does he trust me? Yeah, he 100% trusts me, so he doesn't need to know where I'm at all times. He doesn't live close by, which for me is great. I still have my time with my friends. I still have my recovery. He is not sober, but he supports me in recovery. I text him that I'm at a meeting, and I don't hear from him for an hour. Perfect. It's just really, really great. You know, I was down at his house earlier this morning, and I had to leave so I could be here, and because I said I would be here. You know, there was no backing out of this. Today, I'm a person of my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I may have to sharpie it in my calendar so that I can't erase it, but I will be there. And he supports that. He had no problem meeting my AA family. He loved them. And all my friendships are just really healthy today. My communication skills have improved dramatically. I don't snap like I used to. I can I can tell you that I have a problem with you with the same head and point out my part in it today. And before I was a big, I'm just going to point out every flaw you have because I don't have any. And I don't do that today. I'm much more level-headed. I don't snap as much. I act very adult-like today. I am 100% out of debt because of recovery, because I'm not wasting my money at the bars anymore. I'm not getting drunk and saying, screw it, and put it on a credit card anymore. Everything in my life has dramatically gotten so much better. My peace of mind. I have a lot of fun in recovery. I am on the go every weekend. Every weekend I have something going on. I'm out fishing in the ocean. I'm in Habitu. I'm at Nasi. I'm going hiking to the waterfalls. I'm going to Big Sur. I always have something going on. So when I say I need to sharpen things on my calendar, it's a true statement. I'm never home. But I like it that way because idle hands, they don't do so good. So when I do have idle hands or I find myself getting bored, I might throw myself into meetings a little bit heavier because I go. And I like it that way. AA taught me that it taught me how to be a human being. It didn't just teach me how to not drink. It taught me how to cope with life. It taught me how to respond instead of react. I definitely believe that the 12 steps should be taught in school. It does not need to be an addiction-related thing. I don't believe it should. It's like teaching manners. To me, the 12 steps should be like manners. Reading the big book, when I was in jail, I read that thing front to back, and it was mind-blowing how much I related to, how much just trying to control it. God, I tried to control my drinking. And I remember telling my friends, like, when people would suggest AA to me, I asked them, can AA teach me how to control my drinking? Because if AA can teach me how to control it, then I'll go. I don't want to stop. I just want to not get so drunk. Because I wasn't drinking to get obliterated. My whole goal in my drinking career was to learn how to drink as much as the boys and not black out. So I would do the waters in between beers. I would do the beer instead of hard alcohol. And reading that book and it talking about the control and like the agreements that you make to yourself, you know, like, well, I won't drink today so I can drink tomorrow. There's a big event coming up this weekend, so, you know, we're going to be drinking all night, so I'll make sure I eat a lot of carbs today so that I can soak that alcohol up. Like, I hear my friends still talk like that. It's like, I understand what my buddy Paul over here said when he was like, you don't hear a problem with this? I'm like, no, I don't hear a problem with this. Because I hear a problem with my friends talking like that now. You know, like, if you're trying to control your drinking, you might have a problem. I'm thankful this program's here. I'm thankful for sponsors and for giving back. I'm thankful for people showing up for me today. And I'm going to keep coming back. So thank you, guys.